Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Chapter 31, The Third Task. Dumbledore reckons you know who's getting stronger again as well, Ron whispered. Everything Harry had seen in the Pensieve. Nearly everything Dumbledore had told and shown him afterwards, he had now shared with Ron and Hermione, and of course with Sirius, to whom Harry had sent an owl the moment he had left Dumbledore's office. I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And I'm Matt Potts.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. So Matt, we are just a few weeks away from it being the cutoff date for when people can sign up for camp. May 26th is the last day that you can register. So if you would like to join us at our wonderful summer camp in just a few weeks, sign up now, notsorryworks.com.
Also, listeners, remember you can subscribe for ad-free episodes on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a review. That really helps us out. Vanessa, you had the great idea for our Every Flavor Bean Patreon perk today that we could have a conversation about what sort of obstacles we would put in our maze to confound champions. And I have some great ideas and I'm excited to talk about it. So if you would like to hear this Patreon perk or others, please go to patreon.com/Harry Potter Sacred Text.
Matt, you have a story for us today on the theme of spite. What story do you have?
The story that first came to mind really complicated my thinking about spite, so I'm interested to explore it with you and explore spite in this chapter. So right after I graduated from college, I was commissioned an officer of the Navy, and the first thing I had to do was go to school. I had to go learn how to be a naval officer. And the school was located in Newport, Rhode Island, so I moved to Rhode Island. You know, I was only meant to live there for as long as I was in the school, for about 6 months. And so I moved in with just a bunch of other guys from my college who are also going into the Navy. And they were guys that I knew, but not super well. Some of them I didn't know very well at all. We graduated from the same college. That was the thing we had in common. And it was fine. I mean, the guys were all fairly nice. But, you know, like, as in any situation where you're living with people that you're just getting to know, like, there are sometimes you're feeling each other out and sometimes things go well and sometimes things go poorly. There's this one other guy who, as a guy I didn't really know well from college, I knew him a little bit. His name was Damon. Damon was from New Jersey. He was pretty funny. Like, he was kind of a goofball. He had very loud and brash and clear opinions about things, and he'd state them pretty assertively. And that was mostly just fun and funny. He was a pretty affable person. Damon and I were generally friendly with each other. I remember there was one time that he said something to me, and I remember the scene more than I remember what he said. Like, it was in the kitchen, and he said something to me that really made me mad. But I didn't know him well enough to actually feel like I could get mad in response. You know, it was like he felt a little bit too much like an acquaintance for me to, like, really engage him on it. And I can't even remember what he said. I have a vague memory that it was kind of lightly racist against Asian people. And so I had this immediate reaction, but I didn't want to engage him directly. Either didn't know him well enough or didn't want to have the confrontation or whatever. But I was really mad. I remember feeling like this anger and feeling this resentment inside me. And what I did still kind of mystifies me. Like, I decided to make dinner for everybody in the house. the next day, I went grocery shopping, and they have pretty good clams in Rhode Island. So I got some clams, and I made a clam sauce and some pasta. And I remember I made some kind of dessert. I think it was some kind of, like, brownies or cake or something. But I remember doing it for spite. I wasn't doing it because I was really grateful to Damon or wanted to do something nice for him. I was feeling this anger and I needed to process that anger some way. And I did a nice thing instead of a mean thing. Now, I'm not trying to make myself look good here. I do mean, petty things all the time. I just usually do them spontaneously. I usually do them spontaneously when I lose my temper or something, right? This was more like, I'm angry. I don't know what to do about it. I don't feel like I can confront this person or I don't want to. And so I'm going to do a nice thing instead. And I'm not even sure why I chose to make a dinner for them or what I was trying to get out of it or how it would satisfy my feelings of spite. I think maybe it was either that I hoped that maybe he would feel bad because I had done this kind thing for him, like his feeling of gratefulness or his feeling of like gratitude or realizing that he owed me something would make him just feel obligated to me in some way and that would satisfy my spite. Or maybe I hoped that he would somehow realize through my generosity that he shouldn't have said the thing he said and therefore be compelled to apologize to me or something. I don't think there's a rationality to why I was doing it. I don't think it actually makes any sense, really. I should have probably just said something to him if he said something lightly racist to me. But because I didn't have the courage or the will to do that in that moment, what I didn't said was like try to get at satisfying my resentment a different way. Try to make him feel guilty or obligated to me in a different way through this kind act, which raises the question whether it's a kind act. I think it was a spiteful act, right? I think it wasn't a very effective spiteful act. I also recall none of those things happened. I think Damon enjoyed the meal.
He wasn't like, these brownies are delicious. I'm sorry, it was racist, Matt. That's not what happened.
And if I recall, I think I cleaned up after dinner as well. So I don't think it wasn't a very effective spiteful act, but I do remember the motivating feeling was spite, not kindness.
I mean, it's so interesting. First of all, I really recognize this instinct of like, I know that I have spitefully listened to someone if I find that they've been talking about themselves for a really long time and like not asked me a single question. I'll be like, do you know what I'm going to do? To prove how ridiculous you are, I'm gonna keep listening, right? Like, I have often done things that look really gracious because I want the upper hand morally, right?
Yes.
Like, I am spitefully trying to prove that I am superior.
That's
and
right.
So I'm taking the high road, but only to stomp on their low road and like hope that the detritus from my stomping falls on their low road. So I this really resonates with me. And it's really interesting to wonder about the impact of spite. So thank you for that great story.
One of the things we talked about a lot on the podcast about various topics is like, what's the relationship between intention and action? Right? Like, if you intend something bad, but it comes out good, is it good or bad? Or if you intend something good and it comes out bad, is it good or bad? I think we have to ask those questions, and there are important ramifications to those answers. And this is another one of those things. Etymologically speaking, the word spite comes from the Latin despectus, which means contempt, and that becomes despot in French, and then spite. Spite just means contempt. So if you do anything with contempt, you do it with spite.
Huh.
But that means, like, can you do kind things with contempt? I think you can. I think all of us do kind things with contempt sometimes, right?
That is often the only motivating factor that I have for doing the right thing.
Right? And so, I think this is interesting because I think spite is a feeling more than an action. So it's relationship to action is what becomes really interesting. And I think we're going to see some of that arising in this chapter as well, because we see people feeling resentment. We see people feeling anger in this chapter, but that doesn't necessarily correspond to their actions all the time.
Yeah.
Vanessa, you are going to recap this chapter for us in 30 seconds. Would you like me to count you in?
Yes, but before you count me in, Matt, I would just like to register a complaint to the listeners, which is that in my opinion, this should be two chapters. Half the chapters before the third task. Okay, thank you.
3, 2, 1, go.
So Harry, Ron, and Hermione are really practicing to get Harry ready for the third task. All of the families come to support the champions, and Molly and Bill come to support Harry, and that's so cute. And then it's time for the third task, and it's a maze. And I have a lot of questions about things that go on, but Harry and Cedric keep running into each other. Fleur screams, Crumb, Crucio's Cedric, and then Cedric and Harry decide to tie, and they run to the thing together, and they touch it at the same time, and it's a port key.
Good job.
Thank you.
What was it at the end? I couldn't hear.
It's a port key.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry. It is a port key. Is that better?
That's better. That's better. I mean, I'm one to talk. I know when you get in that last 5 seconds, for some reason, speed corresponds with volume. All right. This is a long chapter. Okay.
Okay. On your mark. Get set. Go.
So they're practicing in the beginning, and they see Malfoy talking into a walkie-talkie or something. And then a news article comes out, which is about Rita Skeeter and how Harry's falling apart, and that makes everyone very mad. And then the parents are there, and Harry's like, why am I going? But he goes, and it's Molly and Bill. And Molly's not super nice to Hermione until they tell her to be nice to Hermione. And then the third test starts, and it seems far too dangerous for children to be doing. And the thing about Floor, and then Crumb does an awful thing. But and then they answer the Sphinx together, and they a spider attacks, and then they grab the port key at the same time.
Oh my god, that spider, man.
Yeah, I got very loud with spider attacks. So Vanessa, you know, one of the things about Harry is that in the series, he very rarely articulates actual hatred, right? Like, he gets angry at times, and he goes into kind of adolescent or teen rage, which is totally understandable, especially given the deal that he has been handed by life and by the world and by Hogwarts and by Dumbledore, right? But in terms of articulating hatred and contempt, which is just what spite means if we believe our etymology, like, this chapter has one of the clearest examples of this. You know, Harry has just learned about the fate of Neville's parents, and at Dumbledore's request at the end of the last chapter, he has not shared this information with Ron and Hermione, and so he actually goes to bed at the beginning of the chapter thinking about Neville's parents and also comparing his own plight, you know, having lost his parents, and trying to imagine the kind of suffering that Neville's going through. But that empathy for Neville also leads to, like, this surge of contempt, of spitefulness. There's a line in the chapter that says, lying in the darkness, Harry felt a rush of anger and hate toward the people who had tortured Mr. and Mrs. Longbottom. And, you know, he keeps thinking about the other families that have been torn apart, like his own, by Voldemort. And he just has this kind of surge of anger and hatred towards Voldemort. He sees that Voldemort is the source of all this pain. Spitefulness almost seems like too petty a word for what he's talking about. But insofar as spite is meant to convey contempt, this is contempt, right? He has utter contempt for Voldemort because of all the harm and pain that Voldemort has caused. And the moment is important here, right? Like, it's important that this surge of hatefulness, this realization, I mean, just narratively in the arc of this book and in the series, that this surge of hatefulness and resentment and contempt and spite for all the harm that Voldemort and the Death Eaters have caused comes just before he has this most dramatic, so far in this series, encounter with Voldemort. He's had other ones, obviously, but where Voldemort is coming back and where he sees someone murdered in front of him, it's getting real. And
yeah,
the fact that violence getting real is accompanied by, like, this emotional surge within him. You know, we're always asking the question about how we match intention to action. And in some ways, you know, the feelings are going to shift in over the course of the next three books, like, what actions arise out of this, what's happening in this moment, and what he's learned in the last chapter, and what's going to happen in the next chapter is what carries forward the next three books. Like, what are the acts? What are the actions that Harry's going to take in response to this?
And I also wonder, spite is sometimes productive, right? It can make a person who is looming large in your head small again. Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder if, you know, we're going to see Harry be incredibly heroic in the next chapter. And I wonder if part of this is the context of having information about all of the reasons to hate these people who he's about to encounter.
Yeah.
He's going to be able to hold a spell with Voldemort for a really long time. He's going to be able to conjure his parents in order to give him support. He is going to be able to take Cedric back, all these, like, deeply heroic acts. And sometimes, like, you know, Harry is so incredible that it is possible that he would have been able to do all that anyway. But motivation and, like, the opportunity to have ruminated on this first can often help. And so he is able to behave, I think, because he has this information for a little while ahead.
Yeah, I think that there's something gives him courage in the next chapter. I mean, he's a courageous kid.
Yeah.
And he also just has courage. But something gives him resolve in the next chapter and in the next three books. And I think it is just, like, the acute memory, not just of what happens to Cedric in the next chapter, but Neville and his parents and all those things that give him that resolve. I think contempt and resentment are part of that. And I think you're right. I think that this is why it's important to separate intention from action, right? Because negative affects can have productive outcomes in the world, and we should think about their effects as much as those intentions. You know, another place early in the chapter where we learn some things about spite, or I think that we can see spite operating, is just in kind of every detail around the situation of this story in the Daily Prophet about Harry, right? So early in the chapter, you know, we as readers observe Malfoy, like, from a distance, whispering into his hand about something with Crabbe and Goyle. And then, not coincidentally, we will later learn, the next day the Daily Prophet arrives and Hermione gets it and Ron gets it and they try to hide it from Harry because there's a long story about how Harry is falling apart and not stable and should not be participating in the Triwizard Tournament. This part Rita gets right. and says all these, like, half-truths or untruths about Harry. And I feel like the whole thing is, like, just there's spite around the whole thing. I mean, Draco feeds the information to Reader Skeeter just out of spite, pure spite. Like, he wants to cause harm to Harry. He resents Harry. And he knows the effect this will cause. And it's for pure spitefulness that he shares it with Rita. But also, you know, Rita, you could say that she has contempt for the truth. Like, she speaks in spite of the truth or despite the obvious facts. She doesn't actually care what the truth is. She's either trying to sell newspapers or trying to create a big story. And that's its own kind of spitefulness, right? When you act in utter disregard for the goodwill of others because it serves your own purposes, that's a different kind of contempt, right? It's not like the kind of active hatefulness that we saw out of Harry a couple of minutes ago, but that utter disregard for people or putting their needs and wants aside for the sake of your own with absolute disregard, that's its own kind of contempt, right? Its own kind of spitefulness. And that's what Rita's doing, I think, when she writes these stories.
Yeah, it's fascinating how many different intentions or desires are at play in an article like this. And I think that we see this just in media in general, right? That so many people have so many angles that they're playing. But you're right that the contempt is for the truth. And really, the contempt at the end of the day is for the reader, right? That, like, no one seems to care that the reader is being lied to. And often contempt can be just not thinking about someone, right? The opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference, right? Like, the greatest contempt you can show someone is just by not thinking about them. Yeah. And no one is thinking about the reader in this article. And yet I do think that Rita happens upon this, like, huge truth, which is that this child should not be in this game. So again, the separation of, like, you can be motivated by any number of things.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by MeUndies. Vanessa, my underwear drawer is like the Wild West of wardrobes.
Say more, Matt.
There's no rhyme or reason. Anything goes. I get gifts for, like, Christmas. There are seasonal underpants and socks. I have pairs from 5 different brands with 5 different fits. When I open my underwear drawer every morning, I have no idea what to expect. But I'll tell you what the best part of my underwear drawer is, Vanessa. It's the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. When I open that underwear drawer, they're always what I reach for first. I know it's time to do the laundry when my unfavorite underwear is all that's left in the drawer.
Matt, my MeUndies underwear is my favorite underwear too. I actually have to do laundry today because I am wearing my last pair of clean MeUndies underwear. From black classics to fun, expressive prints, MeUndies has a look for everyone, and they come in sizes extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for every body. They also, and this is what I love about them, have unmatched comfort. MeUndies' signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. It's breathable and stretchy and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all day wear. Get 20% off of your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/HPST. That's MeUndies.com/HPST for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. I'm really interested in this idea of when spite does serve us. We see this moment in the chapter where Cedric gets attacked, brutally attacked by Crumb. And we will know that Crumb is imperious and so did not knowingly attack Cedric. But Cedric's experience that he was just crucioed, was just tortured with pain by Victor Crumb. And Harry comes and helps Cedric and they stun Crumb. And Harry and Cedric have this like brief conversation about what should be done. And Harry says we should probably send up Sparks so that somebody comes and gets Crumb, because if we just leave him here, then Crumb will be attacked by the blast-ended Scroots in the maze. And Cedric says this spiteful thing, right? He says he would deserve it. He just crucified me. He would deserve to be attacked by a blast-ended Scroot. And this is a self-protection technique, right? That spite, if Cedric were to have emerged from the maze, would protect him against Crumb, right? Like, spite is a distancing emotion so yeah. that the person can't hurt you a second time. But what's so interesting to me about this, and I think is just true in our lives in general, is that the spite would actually be against the wrong person. Crumb was imperious, right? Like, he didn't knowingly do this. And when I think about things like anti-immigrant sentiments, it's often spite because you're misunderstanding a situation, right? Oh, those people are taking our jobs. And it's like, well, actually, right? Like, that is not what's actually happening. And Cedric is only seeing that Crumb is being violent to him when actually there is something bigger going on in the background here. And so the concern with spite, I think, is that it is this like reasonable distancing action that you can be taking out on the wrong people or for the wrong reasons or without all of the information.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think this is I think everything you say about spite is correct. It functions in many ways the same way as anger. Mm-hmm. I mean, insofar as it's related to contempt, I mean, contempt gets closer to hatred. We had a hatred episode before where we talked about hatred is wanting the other not to exist at all. And I think some of the things you said about indifference really speak to that, how like being indifferent to the other, pretending they don't exist, goes towards that hatefulness. But insofar as like spite is more like anger, anger is like, oh, that hurt me and I need to protect myself from being hurt, right? Like that's a different kind of, anger does not judge the existential value of the other. It judges the threat of the other, I think, right? And so there's a way in which a certain kind of spitefulness is meant to protect you, right? Like if this person hurts me, like I want distance. It's, as you said, I think really rightly, it's a distancing emotion. It's a self-preservation emotion. But especially in the magical world where people can be controlled by curses, like knowing where the threat comes from gets really complicated, right? And spitefulness can get misdirected or misattributed in ways like this one. Like, this is not going to be the only person in this book who gets imperious now that we're moving into book 5 and 6 and so forth, right? And this becomes a really difficult problem. Yeah, and we saw in the last chapter, this became a problem during the trials of like Ludo Bagman and others. Like, how culpable are they? How much spite should we have toward them? How much do we need to blame them for, you know, responsibility folds into this all pretty quickly.
Yeah, the only thing I would disagree with what you said, Matt, is when you said especially in the magical world. I feel like there's just as much nefarious, you know, stuff happening in the background of our muggle lives where you don't really know where the blame is. I mean, we just had, you know, this is a little over a year ago now. My younger stepdaughter, Amy, was being bullied at school by one of her good friends. And Amy could have been mad at Kaylee, But it turns out that Kaylee's dad had died a couple of years previously, and Kaylee's mom was getting remarried, and Kaylee was having big feelings about that and was acting out, right? Yeah. And like, so like the thing to be mad at was cancer, you know? But I was feeling very spiteful towards Kaylee until I knew that, right? I was like, excuse me, what? And then, of course, you're just like, okay, we need to help Kaylee figure out better coping mechanisms than throwing dirt at Amy. But
no, that's fair, of course. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. The imperious curse, I think, is a special case. But yes. I think you're also right to draw attention to how, like, we often are really, in some ways, like, we act in ways that we don't want to act.
Right.
Just because there are forces, emotional forces and other forces that push us in those directions. So that's fair enough.
Yeah, and Kaylee and Amy are really good friends again.
Yeah. I think this leads to one interesting situation of spitefulness at the end of the chapter, and maybe the one that most resembles the story that I gave. So at the end of the chapter, Harry, because he's been attacked by the spider, reminder listeners, he should not be competing in this tournament. Because he's been attacked by the spider, he fractures a bone or he hurts his leg badly, and he can't run towards the cup. And Cedric can, and Cedric gets to the cup before him. And then Cedric, you know, just turns and pauses and says, you know, I wouldn't be here if you hadn't helped me. And Harry's like, well, I wouldn't be here if you hadn't helped me also. And they kind of get into this like contest of like spiteful deference where each one starts saying like, no, you should take it. Just go ahead and take it. Why don't you take it? You ought to have it, not me. And the other one says like, no, you ought to have it, not me. And I feel like there is this kind of, in the same way that I'm spite cooked a dinner for my roommates, I think that they're just sort of saying like, you know what, you can have the cup, but I'm going to have the moral superiority.
Yeah.
Like you can take the championship and the glory, but I'm going to be the one that knows that I was the more virtuous one who gave up the thing that I wanted for the sake of you taking advantage of the fact that I helped you. Right.
Right.
And so neither one wants to be the one who only got it through the help of the other. And so they would rather lose with contempt than win. Right.
Yeah. And hardcore relate to this. Like, imagine someone saying to you, no, you take it. And you going, okay. Like,
I know, right?
I don't know who that person is. They're made of like the same stuff as golden retrievers. And I love
Fred
that
George.
For everyone. Sure. Who are golden retrievers? I just like, I want that for people in the world. But I mean, essentially what they are acknowledging is like, neither of us got this purely, right? Like neither of us actually deserve this cup. And that's the negotiation that they have, right? Where Harry is like, look, you helped me with the second task. And Cedric is like, well, you should have gotten more points for the second task because you actually were trying to save people. Well, you helped me with, right? Like they are having this conversation that are like, neither of us actually deserve it. And therefore, like it wouldn't feel good and you would know that you could have beat me.
Yep.
It's like a weird macho thing, but I'm like totally into it. And I would absolutely do the same thing. I'd be like, no, I don't want it like this.
That's right. Yeah. Given the two of them, like you're right. As soon as one person says you should have it, like they are caught in this loop.
Yeah.
Right. Where neither can take it because once they both know that they did not win it on their own, the person who accepts it is the one who's saying, that doesn't matter because I want it.
And like, that's the thing, right? If one of them in that moment, rather than saying, you go get it, started running, the other one would have done their best to try to run.
Yep.
And so what we're actually learning about is the nature of competition and that competition is about spite. It's about contempt. It's about wanting to dominate, right? It's about saying like, I want to hold you in contempt. And so instead of competing for the cup, what they are competing for is moral superiority.
Oh my gosh. He can no longer run. So the only victory he can have is a moral victory.
Yeah.
So he makes it one immediately where he says like, you go get it. I don't even want it anymore. This is the competition. Now it's like, okay, who's going to win the moral argument? Right? We both are. Let's take the cup together.
Right. And so what Cedric arguably could have done is like, okay, yeah, I will go take it, not because you gave me permission, but because I win, right? Like, I hate when people do this stuff to me.
Yeah.
Like, someone interrupts me and I look at them and they go, no, go ahead, as if they've, like, done some great moral thing. And I'm like, yes, I will go ahead because you interrupted me. Thank you. Like, and then I even have to stop myself from saying thank you. I'm just like, you didn't do anything morally good here.
Right.
But what I love about what Cedric and Harry end up doing is that it subverts the whole thing, right? They were going to come out together. They even, to some extent, subvert Voldemort, right? Like, it's really this beautiful thing where they're saying, like, the competition isn't what matters. What matters is some form of, like, righteousness and fairness. And
yeah.
Which I love.
Thanks for talking about Spite with me, Vanessa.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Great.
Vanessa, it's time for our sacred reading practice. And this week, we are once again doing the practice of sacred imagination. So I'm going to read a short passage from the chapter, and I'm going to invite you and our listeners to try to dwell as deeply into the passage as they can, to try to take some place in the passage. Maybe that means taking up the perspective of a character. Maybe it means being a fly on the wall somewhere. But try to really have a sensory experience of the chapter, and one that maybe you can describe and put into words afterwards.
Okay, can't wait.
The passage I'm going to read comes from when Harry is wandering through the maze. At this point, Harry and Cedric believe the other two competitors have been eliminated. They've heard Fleur scream, and the Crucio thing has happened, and they've left Crumb behind. They've split up and gone different directions, and Harry is making his way through the maze on his own now. But Harry suspects that he's one of the two final competitors, and that the two final competitors are from Hogwarts. Harry moved on, continuing to use the four-point spell, making sure he was moving in the right direction. It was between him and Cedric now. His desire to reach the cup first was now burning stronger than ever, but he could hardly believe what he'd just seen Crumb do. The use of an unforgivable curse on a fellow human being meant a life term in Azkaban. That was what Moody had told them. Crumb surely couldn't have wanted the Triwizard Cup that badly. Harry sped up. Every so often, he hit more dead ends, but the increasing darkness made him feel sure he was getting near the heart of the maze. Then, as he strode down a long, straight path, he saw movement once again, and his beam of wand light hit an extraordinary creature, one which he had only seen in picture form in his monster book of monsters. It was a sphinx. It had the body of an overlarge lion, great clawed paws, and a long, yellowish tail ending in a brown tuft. Its head, however, was that of a woman. She turned her long, almond-shaped eyes upon Harry as he approached. He raised his wand, hesitating. She was not crouching as if to spring, but pacing from side to side of the path, blocking his progress. Then she spoke in a deep, hoarse voice. "You are very near your goal. The quickest way is past me." So will you move, please? Said Harry, knowing what the answer was going to be. No, she said, continuing to pace. Not unless you can answer my riddle. Answer on your first guess, I let you pass. Answer wrongly, I attack. Remain silent, I will let you walk away from me unscathed. Harry's stomach slipped several notches. It was Hermione who was good at this sort of thing, not him. He weighed his chances. If the riddle was too hard, he could keep silent, get away from the Sphinx unharmed, and try and find an alternative route to the sender. Okay, he said. Can I hear the riddle?
So I was Harry. And I don't know why. It must be from the movie. I always picture the maze as like quite wide, and suddenly standing there with the Sphinx, it felt very narrow to me. Like, I am suddenly in a very small space with something that looks like a lion. And yeah, like, I have a healthy respect for animals, right? I just got back from a pilgrimage where we saw a horse and people just walked up to the horse and started petting it. And I'm like, that's a horse. It has teeth. Why would you do that? And like, no one got bit. The horse was very friendly and liked having its nose scratched. But I think I would just be intimidated by being in a small, confined space with a creature that I've only seen in books before. And then he has like the presence of mind to be like, okay, I can walk away, right? Like, there's just like this calm reasonableness in the face of this like very overwhelming sensory experience of being trapped in a hedge with a creature that looks like a lion. There's a lot of calmness that he is able to conjure.
Yeah. I felt that too, especially at the end in the situation you described, which is like, I think when a very scary prospect is given to us, we immediately look for the earliest possible out.
Right.
And Harry knows he has another out. So he waits. He's like, okay, let's hear the riddle.
Yeah.
Right? Like there is like a sense of calm and focus there, which is admirable because the prospect of this creature attacking is very frightening. And if I get it wrong, I'm going to attack. And I think my inclination would be like, oh my gosh, if I get it wrong, it's going to attack.
Right.
Just to focus on that very bad possible outcome where he's just like, okay, I still can get out. I can walk away and be exactly where I was before, trying to find another way through the maze. And there was some calm there, yeah. I mean, I read some calm too, but you know, I invited you and the readers to try to have a sensory experience, and I did get a sense of the growing darkness, which for me, I haven't seen the movie of this book, but for me, it seemed to be more in the just the diminishing light than the narrowing of the walls of the maze, but it did feel darker. I guess the book says it's getting darker, and that's why he thinks he's getting closer to the center of the maze. But for me, it's kind of a cerebral passage, and the thing that really struck me as I was reading it this time was he almost figures it out. Like, he knows the Crumb thing doesn't make sense. Why would Crumb do this? Like, he doesn't actually believe Crumb is evil the way maybe Ron has bad cause to believe Crumb is evil. He knows these things about Karkarov, but I think that he's like, you know, this is just not a wise play. Even if you are trying to win the cup in a cheating fashion, he thinks it just doesn't make sense, but he has this urgency. There's only two of us left. I don't have time to think about that now. I need to go get the cup. It's the same thing about how the competition is kind of distracting him and taking his attention away from the thing he should be paying attention to. Because when I was trying to really be in the moment, and because it was cerebral, I was in Harry's head and noticing the darkness and all these things. I was also kind of in his thoughts, and I just noticed like, no, I want to pay more attention to this. This is actually an interesting question. Why did Crumb do this? But there's no time. I got to move on, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of sense of urgency of the competition keeps him from actually paying attention to the thing that he wants to in some level, and also he ought to. Like, there's something wrong with his competition. There's been something wrong with it from the beginning.
Right.
And all these little clues, including this latest one, are the clues that they should be paying attention to.
Yeah, and it just, like, reminds me of just the abject danger of this for all of these children, and I think you were so right in reminding us that Harry was actually right all along in being concerned for Gabrielle and Hermione and Cho. Like, everyone has been at risk this whole time. This is an incredibly scary experience. And the red sparks thing is really confusing to me, because what if you are so attacked and passed out that you can't get to your wand, right? Like,
yeah,
that seems insufficient. And so, yeah, the danger of this moment, right, which is not a moment in which anything bad actually happens to Harry, is really interesting. That even in this moment where nothing bad happens is so deeply scary.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. That was a fun passage.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
This week's voicemail is from JM.
Hi, Vanessa, Matt, and actually Casper, if he ever listens to these ever again. I am a new listener. I've been binge listening to you guys for the last couple of months, and I'm on book 4 with Vanessa and Casper. And Casper has been explaining that he is so intrigued by owls, and I've loved this. And he got my thoughts, all of you got my thoughts going on the purpose of owls and cats and toads. And my idea comes from the fact that I play Dungeons and Dragons, and all of these creatures are options as familiars. And I started thinking on how these creatures help their wizards and witches with their daily life. Owls obviously carry post back and forth. Cats, like Crookshanks and even Mrs. Norris, who is a familiar for a squib, which I find fascinating. And that got me thinking about Trevor, who is Neville's toad, and what purpose he might provide and what help he might provide to Neville. And it made me realize that all of these creatures are exceptionally magical. Owls are able to find anyone, anywhere. Cats are able to slink and slunk and help and can communicate to their owners, as we can probably tell, especially with Filch and Mrs. Norris. And so I started thinking about how Trevor would help Neville, and I realized that Trevor helps Neville make friends. Trevor is the one who gets lost and helps Neville realize that he needs to ask for help and talks to Hermione. And in so doing, Hermione talks to Harry and Ron. And so the four of them, although Neville isn't necessarily one of the Golden Trio, is still a close friend with Harry, Ron, and Hermione. Trevor is threatened to be poisoned by Snape. And so Hermione helps him and builds that friendship. And I don't know, I just think it's really sweet. The seemingly innocuous Trevor really does play a role and is a familiar and is there for a purpose and is Neville's friend beyond just a comedy point. Thank you so much for doing this podcast. It is amazing and I love it so much. You help me get through my days while my kids are at school and help me get my jobs done. So again, thank you. Bye.
JM, thank you so much for this voicemail. And as a pet owner and lover, I love this theory that the role of Trevor is actually to make friends for Neville. And obviously, Trevor also has, you know, bodily autonomy and his own journey to go on in his life. But I think that, yeah, he really is this bonding thing for Neville. I'm really compelled by this idea of what these animals do for us. And yeah, blessing for Trevor.
James, thanks for your voice memo. I don't really know the concept of the familiar, but I love it. And I think you're absolutely right with everything you say about Trevor and how Trevor fulfills this role, this function for Neville. And it just got me thinking about our dog Suki and how Suki is a companion to me, is a friend to me in really fundamental ways, but also got me thinking about how she draws parts out of me that I don't always go to myself, like her capacity to feel joy and to have wonder and excitement at just everyday things. That's something that I value. It's not something that comes as easily to me as it does to her, and she brings it out of me every day, and she's my familiar, and that's great.
It is now time for us to remember members of our community who have been loved and lost. Oma Maria, who is 85, a fierce, funny, and lovable matriarch. Aunt Liz, who is 79, a retired teacher, devoted gardener and lover of books. Gustavo Alberto Fogo, who was 57, a great brother, friend, husband, father, and uncle. Arvis Green, who was 58, an artist and flautist extraordinaire. And Rolf Stauffens, who was 79, patient, loving, and a train enthusiast. May their memories be a blessing. Matt, who would you like to bless this week?
I would like to bless Madame Maxime. She is not a character who's shown up much, except by sort of attribution, people commenting upon her the last several chapters. But we see her in this chapter, and all it notes is that her eyes are red, and she's looking down.
Yeah.
She's had these challenges in this novel. She has this fight with Hagrid. I mean, what we're learning as time passes and chapters pass and pages turn in this novel is just how much discrimination there is in the wizarding world against giants. And this is a moment where you can just see how deep, like, all this is weighing on her and how deep her hurt is. And I don't know, maybe I'm being too generous or optimistic, but I read in her hurt also that she has this sundered relationship with Hagrid also, that he was actually a warm support and a friendly person. And now she doesn't have that either. Yeah, I think she's really suffering. And so I just wanted to give Maxime a blessing. Who are you blessing, Vanessa?
I would like to bless Molly, who just shows up for Harry in this chapter. We find out that family members have been invited to come and watch The Last Task. And, you know, Harry is like so sure that the Dursleys didn't show up that he's like, I'm just going to go to the library. And Cedric is like, dude, no, come here. And it's Molly. And I don't know how this happened, if McGonagall wrote to Molly or Molly wrote to McGonagall, but like, awesome conversations happened in the background in order for something perfect to happen for this child. And I love it. And I love how nonchalant everyone is about it. They're not like, wasn't this great? Isn't this a really big deal? They just like all have lunch and it's very chill.
Yeah.
And I'm just a blessing for Molly for being awesome.
Next week, we're going to read book 4, chapter 32, Flesh, Blood, and Bone, through the theme, Vanessa, of intention.
Ooh. Before we say our thanks, we want to just remind you that you just have a couple more weeks to sign up for our summer camp, Come Away Magnificent People. We have a Harry Potter pilgrimage, an Emily Dickinson pilgrimage. In just a few days, we also have a class called Remembering All Too Well, Taylor Swift and Confessional Writing, and you can sign up for all of those things at notsorryworks.com. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producer is Ariana Nettleman. We are edited and produced by AJ Uramas. Our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast.
Special thanks to those who are leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts. This week, we especially want to thank Postmodern Peach and EmmyGal22. We also want to give special thanks to JM for their voice memo this week, to Laura Glass, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Willison, Nikki Zoltan, Courtney Brown, Casper Terkyle, Stephanie Paulsell, and everyone who sent in the names of their loved ones this week.
Matt, it's real soon now. Matt, it's real soon now. Camp.
I felt like you went Beverly Hillbillies for a second there. Like, it's real soon now. Matt, it's real soon now.
Wow, is that how I sounded?
It did a little bit. I was like, are you doing an accent right now? Oh, you're not. You're just talking.